What is up? Thanks for tuning in. It is the MMA podcast number 200. We made it, episode 200. And of course, we got a ton to break down this Saturday, UFC 211, a stacked card. Tons of great fights, including two title fights on the line. Stipe Miocic and Joanna Jędrzejczyk both looking to defend their belts. Also talk a little bit about Dana White pulling GSP from the Bisping fight, putting in the proper number one contender, Yoel Romero. Who GSP gets next, we don't know. We'll talk about it. Also, it looks like we got Jones Cormier going down at UFC 214 with a couple other fights. We're stoked to be back, be bringing you MMA, TMP 200. Let's do it.
Listening to the MMA podcast.
Thank you, Lenny Hart, and thank you, the listener, for tuning in. A very, very special episode, the MMA podcast, episode 200. It's been a fun 200, and I think three or four. I think we had a few bonus episodes packed in there. So I guess it's not actually the 200th episode, but it is TMP 200, and no better week to do it than this week. You know, we took a little bit of a hiatus. Both had various things going on, and quite frankly, there really wasn't much to talk about in the MMA world. But right now, we are back. A few news topics, including, of course, UFC 211 going down in Dallas this Saturday. Joined as always by Sweet Pappy Jones. Pat, what's going on with you?
Oh, Jake, we are out here living the life. It is a beautiful May Thursday in SoCal. The birds are chirping. The sun is shining. You know, the laborers are laboring. It's fantastic. All is right with the world. We are back with the MMA podcast, number 200. Very excited, man. What a fun journey it has been. Discussing all the scraps, getting to know you, interacting with the fans, all of our various guests and co-hosts over the years, man. It's been excellent. Very excited to do this one, and looking forward to the next 200.
Yeah, man, it's wild. I mean, from you know, the fun it's been doing all these, to the close friends I've met, to the people I've been able to talk to, the places I've been able to go, you know, working, both of us working on press row at Glory events, just going to UFC events, seeing fights, meeting people. And I think we're rolling up too. Come in about a month, June 6th. I think our first ever episode was June 6th, 2012. So it's about to be our 5-year anniversary too. So, a bunch of milestones in the next month. But yeah, we, really appreciate you listening. And actually looking, we haven't done interviews recently, but now that the, schedule, at least for myself, has opened up a little bit more, we are looking to get some, more interviews going down the line. Actually, recently spoke to, Ben Askren, who's going to be fighting in about a week over in Asia for ONE FC. I produce his wrestling podcast, the T-Row and Funky Show. He has said that he would be glad to come on the show when he gets back from his fight. Also going to try and line some things up with some past guests, Aljamain Sterling, a few other guests that I have down the pipeline, but I don't want to confirm anything until they actually get on the show, because way too many things have fallen through. But yeah, it's been a fun 5 years, 200 episodes, however you want to count it. And yeah, we did take a little bit of time off, but but we're looking forward to the summer and charging ahead, doing more. We normally, I guess, save the fight breakdown for the end of the show, but I was, you know, talking to Pat. You know, I'm looking to switch things up, kind of look for new approaches as we are now on the 200th episode. I'm going to say that as many times as I can because I can't believe we made it here. But let's start off with UFC 211 because I think that's at least is what is on my mind the most. I do definitely want to talk about Dana White scrapping GSP from the Bisping fight, a few fight announcements, including DC and Cormier at UFC 214. But let's start off with UFC 211 going down this Saturday, May 13th, Dallas, Texas. We will have a couple men on the street there. The MMA podcast, I don't know if you would call them field reporters, but Alan and Hunter both will be at the event. I think they're driving over from Louisiana. This is, you know, I really hadn't gone into the card and looked at who is on this card. This is going to be a really good card. There are a lot of close fights. I think with the exceptions of the fights where James Vick and Gadzimurad and Tigulov, which props to me for pronouncing that right, except for those two fights where those two guys are the favorites, every single fight, the odds are minus 150 or closer. Like, these are very, I mean, Vegas, and that's basically a pick 'em in Vegas. So, of, you know, I guess there's, what, about 13 fights on this card. Only two, or, yeah, only two aren't basically pick 'em. So, you're going to see a lot of close fights, a lot of scraps, a lot of fights that probably would be easily fight of the night on any other card. But I think there will be a lot in the running on this one. I guess let's start with the prelims like we usually do. You know, I start normally, but we're in the mood of switching stuff up. Pat, I'll let you lead off. What do you see on the prelims that will be on UFC Fight Pass? And I guess the FX prelims should kick off, as they usually do, at 8 o'clock Eastern.
Page for me here, Jake, and thank you for letting me lead. Too kind, sir. What a gentleman. You know, I'm seeing Jessica Jag Aguilar making her comeback. That's going to be in the featured bout on the Fight Pass portion of the prelims. Jessica Aguilar versus Courtney Casey. Jessica's been out for, gosh, almost a year and a half, almost close to 2 years, I want to say. Her last fight was UFC 190 in August of 2015, so just a couple months shy of a two-year layoff. It'll be good to see her getting back in the cage. Not the most known of fighters on the Fight Pass portion of the card, but should be some good scraps there. Chase Sherman versus Rashad Coulter, Gabriel Benitez versus Enrique Barzola, Joaquin Christensen versus Gadzimurad Antigulov. Hopefully I got that one halfway decent. And then the preliminary card on FX should also be similarly fantastic, starting with James Vick versus Marco Polo Reyes. James Vick, he's been doing a great job since his time on the Tough 15 season, I believe it was, the Tough Live season. I want to say he's only dropped one fight, maybe two in the UFC. I'd have to double check. Yeah, just the one loss. And so it'll be good to see how he fares. I want to say he's a pretty good favorite against against Reyes. Jared Gordon versus Michael Quinones. Chaz Skelly versus Jason Knight. That should be a good one. Chaz Skelly, great chain wrestler. Sticky as all get out. Truly a fantastic grappler. Should be a solid scrap there. And Eddie Alvarez versus Dustin Poirier, the highlight of the preliminary card on FX. Man, that is going to be a great bout. Certainly could go either way. I mean, I think of all the cards, or of all the fights we mentioned so far in the prelim portions, that one's got to be the most anticipated. And I'm man, I'm kind of favoring Dustin just because I think he's got a little length, a little reach on Eddie Alvarez. May be able to reach out and put some of those combos on Eddie a little easier than Eddie may be able to get to Dustin. But Eddie may have a bit of the wrestling advantage. Oh, man, I don't know. That's going to be a great scrap no matter how that one plays out.
Yeah, these prelims, you know, I've kind of skipped more prelims recently than I'd like to say I have, but I will be watching this entire card because, like you said, there are some interesting matchups. Even the first one, you know, I mentioned that it might not necessarily be a close fight, but 205 is a weight class that really needs some new faces, some new blood. They're very much struggling to come up with guys who haven't been put down by either Jon Jones or Daniel Cormier. Gazimiran Antigulov might be that guy, might be that next guy to come up the ranks of 205. He's only 30, which by that weight class's standard is not old at all. I think he gets over this fight against Joachim Christensen, and I think he makes some waves at 205 in 2017, barring any injuries or setback like that. A couple of young, underrated guys at 145 in Gabriel Benitez and Enrique Barzola. Both these guys are fit. I think I've seen one fight of each guy, and Barzola was impressive. He was, you know, real quick. But when I saw Benitez throw, he came with some hammers. So just because of that, I'm picking him in this fight. Another fight between Chase Sherman and Rashad Coulter. 265, like 205, is in some need for some young blood. And it'll be interesting to see who wins this fight. Like you said, Jag against Courtney Casey. Jessica was supposed to be the next big thing at strawweight. Stepped in and lost a unanimous decision to the pretty much accepted number two at 115. Claudia Gadelha lost pretty handily too, if I remember correctly. So she's looking to get her first UFC win here against Courtney Casey after, I guess she was on a wild win streak over in World Series of Fighting. She had won like 10 in a row, lost her most recent one, so looking to get back in the win column. Then we move to the FX card. Marco Polo, James Vick, I think, has this fight easy. I think this is a little tune-up fight for a guy in James Vick who I think he fought recently, but before that hadn't fought in years and years or something. No, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess he took off 2011 or 2013. Yeah, sorry.
No, sorry, yeah. He was a little off and on there. I feel like he's been a little more active in the last year, but yeah, he did have a little layoff there.
Yeah, I don't see any major gaps between fights, but he only fought once in 2015, fought twice in 2016. This will be his second fight in 2017. So, and when you look at the guy's record, not a lot of losses either. Dude's 10-1. His only loss is to Beniel Darush back at UFC 199. All of his other fights against, you know, guys like Abel Trujillo, Jake Matthews, Ramsey Nijem, all wins, and actually all submission wins against tough guys like Matthew Trujillo and Nijem. So I think he's properly a big favorite in that one. A couple more featherweight fights between Jared Gordon and Michael Quinones and Chaz Skelly and Jason Knight. Knight, I think, is only, what, 23 or 24? And he and Skelly are like copies of one another. They're both, you know, can take shots. They both scramble like hell. They both have slick jiu-jitsu skills. If I had to go with one, I just think because he's, you know, a little older, a little bit, I think, more based in wrestling, which is usually an advantage, a little bit more UFC experience, I believe, too, even though I think they have very similar records. I think one's 17-2 and one's 16-2 or something. A little bit better opponents for Chaz Skelly as far as his strength of schedule, so to speak. I'll go with him. And yeah, we were talking before, Eddie Alvarez against Dustin Poirier. And I was going to say Poirier, because that's how I usually say it, because I have a childhood friend with the same last name who pronounced it phonetically like that, Poirier. I tried to call Hunter before the podcast, because he always gives me shit about saying his name wrong. Hunter didn't pick up. I don't know if he has me blocked or something. But then I called Alan. I said, Alan, how do you pronounce this motherfucker's name? And he said, Dustin Poirier. So I think now you pour a beer and then go yay, because you're about to drink a beer. Poirier. So that's how you say his name for those at home who are wondering and who wonder why I mispronounce it every show. Dustin Poirier versus the former champion, Eddie Alvarez. Eddie kind of obviously on a downward trajectory after losing to Conor McGregor. That was his most recent fight. And I think this is going to come down to the same element that the Conor fight went down to at UFC 205, which was Eddie takes a lot of shots, and Eddie has been known for having that iron chin, and there are a lot of guys, you know, he has incredible heart and a great chin and can probably stand up to most of the guys in the UFC. We learned that Conor is not one of those guys. He hits too hard. And I think Dustin, you put him in that same spot as Conor. I don't think he throws as hard as Conor, but Dustin throws incredibly hard. Dustin, even more so, is incredibly accurate. Dude, especially in his last few fights, has just thrown these flurries and these combos where, you know, it's like an 8-punch flurry, and 7 of them land crisp. I mean, the dude is a monster. So, you know, you look at that fight. I think it was against Bobby Green at UFC 199. Incredible. So I'm taking him here over Eddie Alvarez in the main event of the prelims before we get to the main card. And the main card starts off, you know, I was thinking that they would move up the Dustin fight to the main card, but I guess it makes sense that they want to keep it that as the headliner of the FX card to give people a reason to tune into that. And if it's not the Poirier fight, I like them putting this Krzysztof Jotko Dave Branch fight into the main card. And I'll let you get into it first, but I just want to say not to give Jotko his proper due, but dude, I am excited as hell to see David Branch finally make his return to the UFC. It's been, I guess, what, 6 years since his last fight over here, and since then he went over to the World Series of Fighting and absolutely dominated, going 10-0 over there. I think he defended his belt 7 times, was probably historically, now that the World Series of Fighting seems to be pretty much done and over with, he is probably the greatest fighter in that organization's history. Just, I mean, look at his record. Beat a lot of good dudes from Paulo Filho toward the beginning to Yushin Okami there in the middle, to beating guys like Vinny Magalhães and Lewis Taylor there at the end late last year. Very excited to see him make his first octagon appearance since what, March 3rd, 2011, when he lost by knee bar to Husamar Palhares. Pat, what do you think about this fight between Jotko and Dave Branch?
Pretty excited for it as well, Jake. You know, and I was right with you when the Cejudo Pettis fight was scrapped from the card very late there. I was thinking the same thing. I thought Poirier and Alvarez would get bumped up to the main card slot, but no, like you're saying, makes sense. Leave that on FX. That's a good ratings draw there. make sure everybody sets their DVRs for FX. And then, Jocko versus Branch. That's a very nice way to open it. I mean, Jocko, he's on a 5-fight win streak in the UFC. He's 6-1 overall in the UFC. And David Branch, like you mentioned, that 10-fight, went 10-0 in World Series of Fighting, was the light heavyweight and middleweight champion, held 2 belts over there. So, it's going to be good to see him come back, see what kind of success he can have in the UFC. Hopefully he's able to replicate some of that. Certainly not an easy draw in Jocko. Again, he's a taller fighter, got a lot of range there. Pretty crafty as well, and it should be a great scrap. I'm very much looking forward to that. It should be a very nice kickoff to the pay-per-view portion of the card.
Yeah, you know, and to give Christoph his due, you know, the average UFC fan, I want you to go right now to SureDog or Wikipedia, wherever you look up fighters, type in his name. And you'll be shocked at all the wins you see. The guy's 19-1, and since joining the UFC is, 7-1, 6-1? The guy's currently on a 5-fight win streak. To get on a 5-fight win streak in the UFC is not easy. There are not many people with 5-plus fight win streaks in the UFC, and of all of them, I think Christoph has probably done it the most quietly. I think he might actually be the most underrated fighter in the UFC currently. The guy just, you know, he's finally getting quality opponents. You know, they put him up against Tor Trong, Scott Askham, Brad Scott, Tamden McCrory, which I guess, you know, Tamden was on the come up, but just got brutally KO'd by Jotko. And then the poll took care of Talis Laetes late last year, which was another very impressive victory. And I think he gets another victory here against Branch. Branch isn't going to have any nerves coming in. You know, this is going to be his first non-title fight in a long time. But, this is going to be his first 3-round fight in a long time. He's been training for all these 5-round fights. And Christoph is probably going to come off hotter. I see Christoph for sure winning the first round. I think he definitely comes out a little bit hotter than Branch, and will be fighting a little bit more aggressive. So even if he doesn't get the finish, I think just by activity, Jotko will win the first round. And that's going to put a big onus on Branch to either win both of the last rounds or, you know, obviously finish the fight. So I see Jocko leading the fight early, but I mean, you know, both of these dudes, I mean, this is maybe like as far as the combined underratedness of all the fighters, so many underrated dudes on this card from the prelims to now we're talking about Jocko and Branch. Guys, you don't normally hear discussed, but are actually pretty damn talented and starting to make some waves at least. I guess that brings us to Frankie Edgar. Oh God, another these are such great fights. Frankie Edgar taking on Yair Rodriguez, and this fight I guess makes sense in the whole 6 degrees of separation between Penn and Edgar. Now that Rodriguez has fought Penn, it only makes sense to face him off against Frankie. Frankie obviously will be a much, much more difficult mountain to climb than trying to fight Penn. Frankie is the favorite here, -120 against the young upstart Rodriguez, who is even odds, +100 in Vegas. You don't normally see Frankie with this even odds against someone unless he's taking on like an Aldo. I mean, this is to have even odds against Frank Edgar means you got some talent. I mean, even when Frankie fought Uriah Faber, who was one of the best featherweights of all time, and even at the end of his career was still throwing and banging, I think Frankie was like -350 or something huge. Like, he is not a very big favorite at all. What do you think about this fight between Yair and old FE?
I really love this fight, and I've got a buddy who is cousins with Yair, and so he's...
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he's actually heading out to Dallas. I want to say he's en route today to make it out there for that fight. So I've really really been paying a lot of attention to this one in particular, and I can see why Vegas has the odds so close. In spite of the fact, I mean, Frank Yeager has to be regarded as one of the pound for pound best fighters, at least in my book. And I don't give a fuck who says otherwise. He has to be one of the best pound for pound fighters that the UFC has ever seen. The striking, the wrestling, the way he's put it all together. He's only ever lost to champions. They've all, pretty much all of his fights have been, when he loses, if he loses, it's very close and very closely contested. I want to say, save for the last meeting with Jose Aldo, I was very surprised. That fight, the first fight with them literally could have gone either way. And that second one, he pretty much got blown out by Aldo. But save for that, you put Frank Yeager in there against pretty much any fighter at 145 or 155, and he wraps him up, he boxes him up, he's the answer. You know, you can't hate on Frank Yeager, and the way he puts it all together so well with the striking, the wrestling, he's such an incredibly talented fighter, and certainly this is going to be the biggest fight Yair Rodriguez has ever had. The victory he had against BJ Penn, granted, BJ Penn, a legend himself, former two-division champion, but this is a BJ that had been retired for years, was coming out of retirement, coming off of a fight where he looked like a person that really should have retired and never fought again. I just can't put a lot of stock in his victory over BJ Penn. Yair has the tools. He has the tools. He's a tall guy, though. He's tall, he's rangy, very crafty. He's with one of the best camps in the entire world, and you know, he's a young cat. He's very young. Frank Yeager, he's been in the UFC for at least a decade now, I want to say, and Yair is a young cat on the rise, undefeated in the UFC, and he's had some impressive finishes. I really think, for me though, Frankie in his wrestling, it's going to be Frankie is going to need to employ the wrestling if he wants a victory. And for my opinion, Yair is going to have to stay long. He's going to have to work those kicks, or just, you know, stay long in general with the strikes and avoid the ground game with Frankie. I don't think that's necessarily the route he wants to go. Granted, you know, he's got the long limbs. If he wants to throw some submission attempts up there, could be easier to wrap Frankie up. But I think he probably wants to utilize his creative striking arsenal, keep it on the feet, and you know, use that distance to get the W there. But man, I could see this fight really going either way. I think I have to put my money on Frankie. Just he's the veteran. He's been there, and this is the toughest test that the young Yair has ever faced. I don't know that he'll be able to negotiate it at this point, but hey, we'll see come Saturday.
Yeah, you alluded to it there toward the end, and I think that is what this fight is pretty much going to come down to, whether Yair can keep range, which is obviously going to be his game plan. I think even though Frankie used to be a lightweight, I believe Yair Rodriguez is the tallest opponent he's ever faced, being 5 inches taller and having 3 extra inches of reach against Frankie. This fight, to me, is obviously going to come down to whether Frankie can get inside, go for the takedown, and, you know, I mean, his top control, lethal. His ground and pound, even more lethal. If he can get Yair down, that's very, very, very bad news. If he can't do that, he's still going to want to pressure him, clinch up with him, because the last thing Frankie needs is what Yair's game plan is going to be, and that's use those rangy kicks, try and keep him away, you know, kicks, punches, and keep range. And if he can stay on the outside against Frank, I think he wins the fight, and I do actually think that that Rodriguez is athletic enough and has the skills to keep range against Frankie. I think the answer of that question is going to be yes. Most of this fight is going to be at a long range as dictated by Yair, and I think Yair wins a decision here. Even though, damn, is it hard to pick against Frankie Edgar. God, these are all dynamite fights. The next fight, what looks to be title eliminator at 170 between the lethal grappler Damian Maia going up against Jorge Masvidal. And even though Maia is on, what, like a 6-fight win streak, 7-fight win streak, dude is on an absolute tear currently. He's won 6 fights in a row against excellent fighters, against guys like Ryan LaFlair, Neil Magny, Gunnar Nelson, Matt Brown, Carlos Condit. He choked Brown out with a rear naked choke and then choked Carlos Condit out in a minute and 52 seconds last August in Vancouver. A lot of people were calling for him to get a shot at the belt after that. Instead, we had the whole thing between Woodley and Wonderboy, which stretched out over 2 fights. Woodley now says he's training for a fight, but no one knows who that fight is. But we do get Damian Maia fighting Jorge Masvidal, who's on a tear of his own. Pat, what do you think about this? This is going to be such a fun fight to watch at welterweight.
This is man, and another one. I guess, like you were mentioning earlier, the odds are all really close on most of the fights on this card for good reason. I mean, Masvidal versus
even
Maia.
both of the title fights too. They're both very close.
Oh man, absolutely, and with good cause. I mean, and with Masvidal and Maia, it really seems like one guy has a definitive. This is your classic striker versus grappler, at least seemingly on paper. You know, Masvidal, very dynamic. He's we just saw him put down Cowboy Cerrone in emphatic fashion. And Cerrone, we all know his pedigree. He's just destroying everybody as of late, or at least he had been doing very well up at welterweight. Masvidal stopped that hype train very quick, and yeah, Masvidal, he's been enjoying a great amount of success since he's come up 270 pounds. He has a great overall game himself, certainly, but no one can compare to Damian Maia's grappling. His grappling pedigree is just nuts, and we've seen it. We've seen him do it to everybody. Gunnar Nelson, a very decorated grappler himself, probably the only person Damian Maia hasn't finished as of late in his wins, and that's because of his, I want to say, gold medal credentials in grappling tournaments. So that's really what you need to have to even be just to not get finished by Damian Maia. I've seen him go up against fighters where I'm like, oh, Damian's not going to be able to get him to the ground, and somehow he does it. You think, oh, Damian, he's got the jiu-jitsu but not the wrestling. Ah, he will get you down. I don't know. It's one of those things. He gets a hold of any part of your body, seemingly, you're going to the ground and you're just going to be wrapped up and you're going to have a bad time. I feel like that's basically what we're going to have here. I think Damian, you know, he's certainly come across very dynamic strikers. I mean, Carlos Condit, as you mentioned, Jake, he finished less than 2 minutes into the first round. Very dynamic striker himself. I'm sure no one would doubt that the natural-born killer is not the one you want to stand with on the feet. And he made very quick work of him, just, you know, like he is one to do with most of his opponents. Love Masvidal. Masvidal, he's a top-notch fighter. He's certainly a world-class at 170 and 155 pounds in my assessment. But Damian Maia, the grappling, I don't think he will be able to navigate that. It's very rare. I don't know who, off the top of my head, who I could even think of that really could. But yeah, I think Masvidal has a chance. You know, if he can catch him quick early on the feet with some really hard strikes, which he's incredibly capable of doing, he could potentially put out put out my and nullify the ground game completely. Certainly a possibility, but I'm leaning towards Maya wrapping him up. I don't know. What are you thinking on this one, Jake?
Well, I think your cat, Mr. Pickles, agrees with you, and I also agree with you. I have Maya not only with a win, but a finish here. And Damian Maya fights, the answer is always, you know, how good of a defensive wrestler is the guy he's going up against? Because if Maya can take you down, it's not a question of if, but when. He's going to win the fight if he can take you down, whether he needs to take you down a ton of times, like that fight against John Fitch, or just to take you down twice, like he did against Gunnar Nelson. I think Jorge Masvidal is a good defensive wrestler. He's for sure better than Matt Brown or Carlos Condit, who were Maya's last two opponents. You look at his tall stance, I don't know if that's going to bode well for him. I think he's maybe a good defensive wrestler, but, you know, the two other guys I mentioned, John Fitch and Nelson, they're both good defensive wrestlers too. And it just seems like unless you really can cut the takedown off like the millisecond it's initiated, like that fight where Maya lost, his most recent loss was that Rory. Yeah, like Rory did an excellent job at not even allowing the takedowns to start. I don't think Masvidal's tall stance is going to bode well. Like I said, I think Damian Maya is going to take him down, and I think he's going to sub him out in the first round. And that is your hot take. Now we got a couple of title fights to break down. The first one between Joanna Jędrzejczyk taking on Jessica Andrade, which, aside from Claudia, it seems like Jessica, I'll put it this way. The only woman that's really been given a chance, odds-wise at least, against Joanna Champ has been Claudia. And Jessica Andrade seems to be the second. She's been given, I think, plus 130 odds, which are very generous, especially considering the reign that Joanna Champ is on. I think Vegas accurately recognizes that Andrade is a major threat here, even though Joanna is rightfully the favorite, I think, sitting at minus 150. Pat, what do you think about Joanna against Jessica here in the women's strawweight? I guess Joanna is going for, this would be title defense number, 1, 2, 3, 4. This would be number 5. So I guess she won it against Carla and then defended it against Penne, Letourneau, Gadelha, and Kowalkiewicz. So this will be number 5 for Joanna Champ in a very short amount of time, and only, I think, less than like 2 years. She's racked up 5 title defenses, if she can get this one.
These are probably the two most active women that the UFC has had in the time that they have implemented, possibly either weight class. Jessica Andrade started at bantamweight, and she's got 10 fights in the UFC already. There's not a lot of women that have 10 fights in the UFC. Man, this is just going to be a barn burner, though. Jessica coming down, undefeated at strawweight. You know, she did well at bantamweight, was, you know, a little up and down over there, fighting some very large women. But, man, the fact that she's able to cut to 115, and she looks very large at 115 as well. And she has performed very well. She seems to really be putting everything together. The hands, the ground game. This certainly seems like it'll be a very stiff test for Joanna. You know, she had some runs for her money against Gadelha. The second fight against Gadelha, she won, more soundly, certainly, no controversy in that fight, in the 5-round affair. Shevchenko, you know, Shevchenko, she did very well. Almost, she got hurt very bad in the fourth round, but managed to come back. I want to say won four out of the five rounds, and I think everybody kind of, the way Shevchenko had hurt her, no one has really hurt Jędrzejczyk like that before. So I know if Jędrzejczyk is able to get past Andrade, certainly Shevchenko, if she's able to win her next bout, will want another crack. And it just, you know, certainly seems to be some vulnerabilities we've seen with Joanna. Of course, I mean, not many. She's the takedown defense is still solid, super solid. And the striking is very hard to contest. I mean, former women's Muay Thai champion, multi-time. I'm picking Joanna in this one, but man, I wouldn't be surprised if Andrade were able to get the victory. I mean, I could see Joanna knocking her out. I could see Andrade grinding it out for a victory there, or possibly getting a finish herself. Really tough one to call, but I think I'm going to pick Joanna in this one. Just the striking is so top notch on her end, and Jessica is a very class, a very game competitor. But I think Joanna's just going to have a little bit more, and she'll be able to get the job done. Probably a late TKO, or the third round or later, I'd say.
Yeah, this is a really difficult one to pick because, you know, as much as the easy pick, I think, or not easy pick, but I think to the uneducated fan, Joanna is the easy pick here. I think Jessica on Andrade is a live dog, even at plus 130. I think might even be more challenged to Joanna than Claudia was. And Claudia, both fights pushed her to her limit. In the first fight, you know, some believe that, you know, she even won. So, you know, this is going to be an opponent where Joanna fights, basically, with the exception of Claudia, have gone one of two ways. Either Joanna finishes you, or it's a five-round fight where, like, maybe the opponent gets one round off, like Carolina did in the fourth round. But overall, just, I mean, Joanna is so sharp and so, I mean, her gas tank, you know, it's almost Mighty Mouse-esque, where it's the fourth and fifth round, and she's throwing just as sharp as she was in the first and second round. I think this is going to be a 25-minute fight. I think this is going to go all five rounds, because both of them have shown to be very, very gritty and durable. So I think this goes all five rounds, and I think this is going to come down to experience. Joanna's last three fights all went the full 25 minutes. Jessica Andrade has never fought in a five-round fight in her life. The longest she's ever gone is 15 minutes. I think, you know, even though she is relentless in her own right and, you know, has a decent gas tank in her own right, Joanna's is next level. I think in that fourth and fifth round is where Joanna has won fights before, including that fight against Claudia, and I think it's where she wins this fight against Jessica. I think she gets number five, and still, nobody going to take this belt from me. I think she will win it. And your main event, the other championship match, going from the lightest weight class in the UFC, 115 pounds, all the way up, twice as heavy, more than twice as heavy, 265, a couple of big galumps, a couple of behemoths, and Stipe Miocic and Junior Dos Santos. This is the second time these guys have squared off. The first time, Junior won, so the challenger is looking to get another win against Stipe, who I guess is himself looking for his second title defense. He is on an incredible streak of his own, four straight wins, all by KO or TKO. Dude TKO'd Mark Hunt in the fifth round and then got back-to-back-to-back first-round knockouts against Andrei Arlovsky, Fabricio Werdum, and Alistair Overeem, all legends in their own right. Going up against Junior, who is on a tear, looking to not only get another crack at Stipe, but get another championship run since losing his belt all the way back in 2012 to Cain Velasquez at UFC 155. He himself is only on a one-fight win streak. Actually, since losing his belt, has gone back and forth. Beat Mark Hunt, lost to Cain. Beat Stipe, lost to Overeem, and earned a title shot with an impressive one-sided victory over Ben Rothwell back at UFC Fight Night Rothwell JDS last April, which was a fight that I believe was in Croatia, which I ironically is Stipe's heritage, although he is an American. Big fight, heavyweight championship. First one, I think. I feel like just because heavyweights seem to get injured more often than the smaller guys, I feel like this is the strap we see contested for the least. So, you know, even though Stipe may not get a lot of play and might not get a lot of pay-per-view buys, generate a lot of buys, Stipe seems like a hell of a dude, hell of a personality, humble champ, fucking firefighter, and, you know, is fun as hell to watch. His last four fights, all victories by KOs over legends. Obviously, Junior, a KO machine in his own right, but it's nice to see the heavyweight strap be fought over. This is the first time we've seen a heavyweight title fight since last September over Overeem Stipe. How do you see this one playing out, Pat?
You know, I have a very tough time picking against someone that had already beat their opponent in a matchup before. But, you know, gosh, that fight, the first fight between Dos Santos and Miocic.
Razor close.
You know, it was very close. You know, it was a majority decision with the judges. It was a unanimous decision with the judges. But there were a couple media outlets that scored it for Miocic. And actually, sadly, one I never went back and rewatched. And one that I probably should have, because that was actually one of the only really fun 25-minute heavyweight fights that I can recall. And that was just a bloody beat down slugfest the whole way, but Miocic did fairly well for that one in himself. And granted, you know, he certainly has the trajectory. After that fight, he's finished every single one of his opponents: Mark Hunt, Alistair Overeem, Fabricio Werdum. He's just been on a demolition. And I think, you know, this may be a situation where he's getting better. Also, who knows, when he first fought Junior Dos Santos, I want to say he was probably still just training part-time doing the firefighter thing. I want to say, I don't even know if he still is an active, like, doing the fireman thing.
I believe he is.
That's just nuts.
As the UFC champ, right? That's incredible.
As the UFC champ. I mean, hey, I'll tell you what, though, that'll certainly keep you in shape. I mean, you're hauling bodies. Well, hopefully not hauling bodies like that, but you know, you're throwing people around all day. But yeah, I don't know. It's very hard. I feel like this is one of those ones. It's like picking a Diego Sanchez fight almost, or at least how it used to be. You know, you would pick Diego Sanchez to win just because, even if he didn't win, the judges are going to give it to him. And I'm wondering if that's going to be one of these situations. Again, I really can't comment on the first fight. I was not watching that one too closely. I was very entertained by it. Man, but just having Junior having that win already, very hard for me to pick against him, although everything's telling me to. I don't know what to do in this one, Jake. I'm going with Stipe.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people picking Stipe will point at Junior's losses and say, well, look, the guy's 3-3 in his last six fights. I don't know if that's fair, because two of those three losses came to Cain Velasquez, who is the best wrestler the heavyweight division has ever seen. And although Stipe has used his wrestling in fights, Stipe isn't the kind of wrestler that Cain is. He's not going to have that kind of advantage over Junior. So I don't know if he necessarily is going to win fights like Junior lost the fights to Cain. Man, this is, you know, this is a fight where it's tough. It's a guy in Junior who's historically known as the hardest hitting heavyweight of all time. And I think this is going to be a passing of the torch because Stipe has just been, you know, people I think aren't giving him enough credit for what he's done in his last three fights. Knockout fucking Alistair Overeem, Fabricio Werdum, and Andrei Arlovsky, all within 5 minutes. He did Arlovsky, I think, within a minute. He TKO'd Mark Hunt. You typically can't finish that guy unless it's by sub, obviously. But no, it's you know, the guy's last four fights might be the most impressive four fight streak in heavyweight history. So as much as I, man, you know, as much as common sense seems to tell me that, oh, Junior's, you know, quicker and Junior might throw harder, I don't know, man. Just, you know, my brain is saying Junior, but my gut is saying Stipe, because you want to ride the hot hand. And I don't think there's ever been a hand this hot in the history of the heavyweights in the UFC. So I'm sticking with Stipe. I'll go with both champs retaining their titles. Jessica getting title defense number 5. Stipe getting title defense number 2. Which, I mean, honestly, the sport needs. I mean, you know, you look at title defenses recently, and it's like there's Mighty Mouse, there's, you know, him at like 10, Joanna at like 4, and everyone else is at like 1 or 0. I mean, we need of course Michael Bisping, but that's a whole nother story, but which we'll actually talk about shortly. But yeah, it's I think it's good for the UFC to get more champs who are staying around longer as champ. I think that's all I got for UFC 211. You have anything else before we hit on a couple more topics and get the hell out of here?
Oh man, you know, should be a good one. Very excited for Saturday. A lot of close scraps. I mean, hey, I also picked both champs to defend, but I could also see a couple new champs being crowned. Man, let's you know, going to be fun to see how it shakes out.
For sure. Let's get to news that I think came down the wire yesterday. Dana White saying George St. Pierre versus Michael Bisping is scrapped, and Yoel Romero will get the next shot at Michael Bisping. And I mentioned it to you before we started, of all the bullshit moves that I've been mad at Dana White and the UFC for, this is awesome. This is awesome. Like, yes, they could have made a bit of money with the whole GSP Bisping fight, but to hold that belt up until October, originally it's supposed to be July. Not only that, but giving Yoel the title shot that he has earned. You know, the UFC, one of my biggest gripes with them has been the fact that they've made all of these title shots based on, you know, ratings and not rankings, as Michael Schiavello once famously said on this show. And this is the exact opposite. GSP is the ratings, and they're scrapping him for the actual number two guy in Yoel. Before we talk about, you know, in any of the further implications, what was your reaction when you saw that Dana White has scrapped it? And I guess, I mean, if he scraps Bisping because he wants, or sorry, he scraps GSP because I think he said he wanted Bisping to fight in July, and he puts in Yoel, I guess this means we get Yoel versus Bisping in July, which must mean we get it either UFC 213 early July in Vegas or UFC 214 late July in Anaheim, I think currently 213 is being headlined by Dillashaw and Garbrandt, 214 being headlined by Jones and DC, which we will talk about in a little bit too. What do you make of all that?
A sound business move, really. I mean, this is, and I think that's really a lot of it. You know, it's still really a money move in this case to go with the rankings, because the ratings won't be there till November. So, hey, you go with the number one contender, you do that fight in July, you know, whoever wins that fight comes out, gets to fight GSP in November. You know, everybody's got plenty of time to heal up, train up, all that good stuff, and you're generating some more revenue by putting on another middleweight title fight in the first place. Makes sense. I guess, you know, they thought GSP was going to be ready for July, going to be ready for UFC Fight Week or something like that, or at least sometime in the summer. And so, you know, yeah, I think this is still a fiscal decision more than anything. Unless Bisping really just pissed him off, then, you know, then they must have just said, all right, fuck it, he's getting Romero. But no, I think, you know, this again, strictly monetary. Good to see, though. I have been one of those people that said, you can generate the money and generate the interest by going by the rankings and you know, the merit of the best-ranked fighters by fighting the best-ranked fighters. So, you know, again, I don't know that that's really what this is, them getting back to the heart of things, you know. I think this is just business necessity. But, yeah, certainly pleased to see. I mean, Romero versus Bisping, that's good. Romero versus anybody, that is a scary dude. I'm always excited to see him hop in the octagon.
And, I mean, so we have the answer for who Bisping is going to fight next, which I guess the only question that remains, who next for GSP? He has posted a video recently, looks a little bulkier. I'm not sure if he's going to try and fight at middleweight or at welterweight. I would assume he's going to fight at middleweight. And there are a lot of options there. I mean, I think Luke Rockhold was chirping the UFC earlier. That would be an incredible fight. I think that would be like, you know, GSP versus almost like the next version of GSP with you know, your all-around athlete. And honestly, I think Luke Rockhold might kick GSP's ass. I think he's a lot bigger than GSP. That, you know, we will see. It does look like GSP's been just drinking gallons of